In a small Polish farm community, during the fall planting season of 1981, events occurred which electrified the world, sending reverberations of magnitude to capitals as diverse as Washington, Peking, and especially Moscow. This village of Bukovo, 763 souls, stood at the spot where the great river Vistula turns to the north in its stately passage from its birthplace in the Carpathian Mountains at the south to its destiny in the Baltic Sea at the north. In the little settlement, there was a stone castle erected in A.D. 914 as a guard against marauders from the east. But this had been destroyed in the early years when those marauders arrived in stupefying force. Each subsequent owner of the village had planned at one time or other either to tear down the ruins or rebuild them. But none had done so, because the old castle exercised a spell on all who saw it. And there was a legend among the villagers that so long as their ruined tower stood, they would stand. There must have been some truth to this, because there had often been great clamor in Bukovo. But like its doomed tower, it still stood. Nearly 36 million Poles, of whom 18 million were of voting age, were controlled by the Communist Party of only 3 million members. This minority had made a symbolic concession right at the start of the present trouble. They agreed to hold the discussions over farm policy in the very village from which the principal protester came, and this was interpreted by all as a sincere gesture of goodwill. But as Janko Buk, the leader they were trying to placate, said, "With the steel strikers giving them so much trouble in Gdansk, they can't afford to have us on their backs, too." The communists had chosen this village for several additional reasons. It lay in the heart of a large agricultural district and was thus representative. It was also well removed from any big city whose practiced agitators might try to influence or even disrupt proceedings. And perhaps most important, it was near the recently renovated Bukovsky Palace, with its 70 rooms available for meetings of whatever size might be required. The three names, Buk for the peasant leader of the Troubles, Bukovo for his village, and Bukovsky for the family which had once owned the palace, obviously stemmed from the same root, the strong word Buk signifying beech tree. And this was appropriate, because from time past remembering, the vast area east of the river had contained a large forest, whose principal trees had been oaks, pines, ash, maples, and especially beech, those tall, heavy trees with excellent trunks. Through the centuries, foresters had selectively cut these trees, sometimes floating the great trunks all the way to the Baltic for shipment to Hamburg and Antwerp. But all the woodsmen had carefully tended a particularly noble stand of beech that defined the eastern edge of the village. Like the castle which they resembled, the beeches of Bukovo possessed a special grace. The great forest, of which they formed such a major part, had not borne a name until A.D. 888, when the extremely primitive people who lived between it and the river were frightened by a semi-madman who lived amongst them. He claimed that one evening, while returning home with a bundle of faggots collected from under the beech trees, he had been accosted by the devil, who wore about his neck long chains which clinked and clanged. And he convinced them, especially the children, that if they listened closely when the devil was afoot, they could hear the rattling chains. The dense woods was named the Forest of Schenk in that long-ago year, and everyone agreed that the name was well chosen. For clinking, clanging sounds did often come from this forest, and since in Polish the letter E, if printed with an accent, E carries an N sound. The word was pronounced Schenk, which resembles the sound that a chain clinking would make. The villagers protected the ruins of their good luck castle and tended the beech trees they loved, but they were proudest of their palace. It had been assembled in rambling style over many centuries by the poor Bukovskis, who had been little better than peasants themselves, although acknowledged as petty nobles, and in grand style by the Bukovskis of 1896, who had stumbled upon a fortune.